Hey, everybody. It's Dylan with a quick message before we jump into this episode with the toast of Mayfair, Marisha Wallace. She's currently starring in Cabaret at the Kit Kat Club as Sally Bowles opposite Billy Porter. And she just released her Live in London album, which is absolutely beyond. You can get it everywhere, buy it, stream it, obsess over it, just like Connor and I have been. Where do I even begin with Marisha? She's obviously a huge Broadway actress. West End actress, two-time Olivier nominated, star of Celebrity Big Brother UK. The list goes on. We talk about as much as we can. She has incredible stories. And honestly, I couldn't think of a better way for us to celebrate 1 year of being partnered with iHeartRadio Broadway than having a true dame of the theater on drama this week. Thank you to everyone who listens every single week, or if this is your first time, welcome. Connor and I love doing this. And in order to keep going, we humbly ask for your support. We have a Patreon where we release two bonus episodes a month, and you're also on our Instagram close friends where we spill a little tea, be a little funny. We're so grateful for all of the support and love that everyone has shared with us, especially this summer of drama. We've been having so much fun. If you want to join that Patreon, the link is in the bio below, or it's at patreon.com/thedramapodcast. And of course, if you're on any of your podcast listening apps, whether it's iHeart or Spotify, Apple, please give us a review, give us a rating. It means the world to us. It helps us get discovered. There's not another moment to spare. Let's get on with the show.
Press play. Curtain up and now we're in.
It's time to take spin.
With shade and tea to spill.
Ooh, drama.
Oh, that's a tweet. Did they book? Who got nom?
They option no.
Oh, I'm not well.
What star will we talk to today?
Oh, that's a gag, honey.
Say no more.
Drama.
Drama.
Welcome to Drama, a podcast that covers theater,
Pop culture.
love.
And life.
I am Connor McDowell.
And I am Dylan McDowell.
Dylan, how are you today?
I'm good. We're here basking in what I can only describe as the afterglow of the series finale of And Just Like That.
Now, would you say afterglow? I mean,
I don't know what to say about it, but I have to say, I'm so sad for multiple reasons. I'm sad it's over. I'm also just sort of sad at the way it went out. You
I
know, it just wasn't
know.
my favorite. I think that the original series had so much sentimentality to it and meaning. And I don't know. I'm bummed. I'm also bummed because I love seeing New York. I love seeing those women. I love seeing so many Broadway people in guest spots on the show. Bonnie Milligan, Victor Garber was in last night's episode.
In a disgraceful role. I mean, come on. It was tough. I know. I love the show so much. The original show, that is. That this was a fun bonus, I suppose. And it's been discoursed to hell and back, of course. I feel like they were finally getting it right the last couple of episodes until the finale.
The toilet humor. I mean, my God. But
Literally, literally. I know. It was a bad ending. It was really bad.
know, didn't stick it, but maybe that means that there'll be some sort of a continuation someday and they'll get the chance to get it right.
I don't know. I mean, I'll take
Yeah,
it. I'll take
we'll
it.
take it. We'll take
Because I
it.
do like the first movie. The first
I
Sex
do
and
like the
City
first movie
movie.
too. Yeah, it's been a
Yeah.
while since I've seen either the first or the second movie. I think it's time to just rewatch the original series over again.
I know. Well, actually, it started auto-playing season 3, episode 1, when the And Just Like That finale ended. And I was like, wow, the original recipe hits. Last thing I'll say is I feel like they really, for whatever reason, decided not to put the women together every single episode, having chats at like brunch or whatever. And that was, I think, the biggest downfall of the show. They weren't talking about life, sex, marriage on a regular basis. They were like afraid to put them all together. I don't know why.
Yeah, that group dynamic I think was lacking. Alas, I'm sure you and I will continue to talk about it. We loved talking about it week to week.
I know. I'll miss it.
I know I'll miss it too. Rest in peace and just like that. But today's also exciting for another reason because anyone who is anyone and knows anything about Broadway, theater, West End knows that an exciting album came out today in the States.
Absolutely. And not only that, but she's starring in one of our favorite Broadway shows
Yes.
that is currently playing, and also one of our favorite revivals that we've ever seen. So
Yes.
I'm thrilled that she, I'm honored that she is joining us on the podcast for this historic Broadway run.
Our guest today is a two-time Olivier Award nominated actress, making her grand return to the Broadway stage as Sally Bowles in Cabaret at the Kit Kat Club opposite Billy Porter, before taking on what many are hailing as her career-defining role. Our fabulous guest starred as Miss Adelaide in the West End revival of Guys and Dolls, as well as played Ado Annie in Oklahoma at the Young Vic. Both roles brought her those Olivier Award nominations. Queen. A taste of our guest's stage credits include performing for His Majesty the King, making her West End debut as Effie White in Dreamgirls, starring as Motormouth Maybelle in Hairspray at the London Coliseum, originating the role of Becky in the West End production of Waitress, and performing in the great British tradition of the Palladium pantomime. In the States, audiences will recognize her from the Broadway companies of Aladdin and Something Rotten, and touring the nation in the Book of Mormon. A fan favorite on the UK's Celebrity Big Brother, the superstar has established herself as an international star of music, theater, and television. Today, her Live in London album is officially available for purchase and streaming, featuring the soundtrack of her life so far on stage and off. She is, in a word, everything. Please welcome to drama, Marisha Wallace.
Hello. What an intro. Thank you.
Oh my God.
I can even take y'all on the road with me to do those intros. This is nice.
That's the highest praise I could ever imagine.
No, I loved it. I was like, oh, I did a lot. Thank you for the recap.
This is a really exciting day because today is album release day. Congratulations.
Oh my God. Y'all, if y'all knew what it took to get to this day, you'd be jumping off the screen. Because I mean, it's just been such an incredible journey from them saying, oh, you're going to do a concert at the Adelphi, to it becoming all of this and Broadway and everything that has come since then. It's been really incredible. This is a celebration day for sure.
Yes, it's so exciting. And the album is absolutely beyond. It is my kind of album because it is a concert, but it's also, there's like that cabaret vibe, yeah, of like storytelling woven throughout. It seriously tells such an amazing, complete story.
Yeah, I wanted to do something that was a bit different because, you know, you can just put out straight ahead musical theater album, but I think what's so incredible about musical theater is the live experience. And when we're in those rooms, how we feel in those rooms, you know, you've been at a concert of somebody you really love and that you follow their journey. It's electric. And I kind of wanted to capture that feeling so you can have it when you're at the gym, when you're at the grocery store, and you need that buzz of a Western show or like that buzz of a theater moment. You can have that anywhere. So I think that we've achieved it.
You absolutely have. Oh my God. I was listening to it again right before we started recording with you. And your rendition of Cabaret had me like jumping around in my apartment, like throwing my arms around. I was pretending to be Sally Bowles for a second, but you just had this electricity within you. Oh my God. I'm like lit right now talking about it.
And I think that's what I love, that you can hear the crowd on it, that you can feel like you're actually there. And then the story, I think, even though it's my story, I forget that my story is so unique in the fact that like this is a lot of people's dreams, like aspiring performers. It's a very good album for you to listen to because sometimes you don't see the process of a person. You only see the product. You only see the shiny, you know, we're on stage and everything, but there's so many things you go through to get to that shiny product that you see. And I think to see the behind the scenes will encourage people to keep going, because I think when we hit a roadblock or a setback in our journey to whatever we want to be, we feel like, oh, that's it, you know, but those are the makings of you. That's what makes you who you are. So I hope it inspires people to keep going, because if I would have given up, you know, back then when someone told me you can't do it or when this happened, I wouldn't be able to see the fruits of my labor today.
Wow. In hearing you talk a lot throughout, you know, all the research we've done to prepare for chatting with you today, you've been so open and honest about having those low moments when you either were doubting yourself or you felt like people weren't recognizing your work and you were questioning, do they see me? Do I see me, et cetera? And you're so authentic and real. So thank you for putting all that out there. I think it is really going to help a lot of people.
I think it's so important. And I feel like theater artists are notorious for being very private about like their struggles. And like, we see them as these idols, but they've gone through so much. When you look at their CVs, you're like, oh my God, the people that I idolized had to go through so much to become who they are. Like I look at Audra, like she's been out here so long, like doing it. And She didn't come up in a time where social media was so big. So we didn't really get to see all of the twists and turns and things. So I was like, well, if I can show the younger generation what it was like to come up in this industry when everything started to change, because we didn't have online auditions. We were like sleeping on people's couches. We created our own community of like bohemians where we were coming up together. And it's been really great to come back to New York and see all the people who were there when we were all in the trenches trying to make it. Because I think some people think because of Instagram and TikTok, everything is instant. Everything, oh, because I can sing, I'm going to be famous. You know what I'm saying? But I think they need to know the road that's ahead and how to navigate it.
I think that's really important for people to see. I mean, I agree with you about a lot of people are very private, especially in the industry, about those struggles. We might not learn about it until the end of their career when they're doing a retrospective and whether a book or maybe a cabaret or something. But I think because we've been along for the ride with you in particular, I mean, Connor and I have loved you for so many years. I don't even know when we started loving you. Probably something rotten, I think, because I remember we saw you in that. But we're then a part of that journey. And then to see you continue to rise to new heights.
Yeah, but you're growing as I'm growing as well. Like you're going through your own enlightenment of who you are and your own struggles. So we're all becoming together because, like, people that I met when I was in the pandemic and we were trying to sort things out, now they've moved on in their lives. So we're all doing it together. It's really beautiful, the community around the show and around me, and it's great.
Yes. Now, I'm curious. Obviously, a lot of the music that is in this album, that's part of this concert, are like those hits from a lot of the shows that you did. But you've peppered in some other fun songs in there too, in particular, My Man, which I, your rendition of My Man. Oh my God, so incredible. What was the curating process like of sort of filling in those other gaps?
Well, I have been touring and doing live and shows for over 20 years. And then mostly in, for the 9 years that I've been in London, I've been testing the work and like seeing what bits of so this concert is kind of amalgamation of a bunch of different set lists, if that makes sense. So the best of all the set lists, the best of the things that people loved, and I've tested it in a park, I've tested it at a 10,000 seat venue, I've tested the Royal Albert Hall, we've tested. So I just wanted to give the fans everything they wanted, and I knew the fans love Waitress, and to be able to hear us sing that together again was like, yes, we want that. Oh yes, I need to hear And I'm Telling You when I need, when I want to. Like, I yes, I need, I can't say no. And a lot of times when I've done shows, there wasn't a cast recording. So this was another way for me to get my versions of the songs out. Thank you, Taylor Swift. Like, you know what I mean? Get my version, my versions of the songs out. But then also in the curating process, I wanted songs that resonated with my story. And so many of the songs did. And then I was like, wait, it's all 11 o'clock numbers. Who's gonna sing this show? I should have called it 11 o'clock, the musical, because it was like literally hit, all killer, no filler. But I was like, well, that's kind of cool to do an all hit thing. So that's cool.
Yeah. Was it one night only at the Adelphi?
It was one night only. Isn't that wild?
That is
And it was
wild.
sold out. The energy in that room was wild. It felt like church, but it also felt like a rock concert. But it also felt like a party and like a place where all the people who had loved me from different places all came together and were like, oh, you liked what I like, but I didn't know you liked that. So now we're all connected. So it was how I felt when I went and saw Renaissance, because I had listened to Renaissance in my own house and I like loved it for myself. And then when I was finally with people who liked what I liked, I was like, oh, wait, this is good. It's crazy. So that was the similar feeling that we had in that room that night.
Oh my
Well, and
gosh.
Renaissance also plays another important role in your life, you know,
Yes.
as we learned on
Beyonce.
the album. Yeah, Beyonce, we owe so much to her.
I owe her a lot. There's more to Beyonce's story with me. We have a cosmic connection, I think. So I met my partner at the Beyonce concert, because he was working there. I met him there and he was like, do you want to come VIP? And then I did, and we met, and I was like, is something happening? Is like, wait, are we?
Did you feel like a vibe?
Yes. But I was like, but
Yeah.
where did this man come from? And we have been passing each other in life for multiple years. I didn't know. So I did this concert for Todrick Hall at the Palladium. I was opening for Todrick, and I have this picture of me on stage, and it's a cool picture. And I look in the crowd, and Mike is in the crowd because he was head of, like, he was working the security and head of security at the Palladium. So he was there, and he remembered me singing. He was married, he was with somebody else. And then I was, with someone else. And then years later, I did the national anthem at the same stadium where Beyonce played.
Was it Wembley?
No, it was Tottenham Hotspur
Okay.
Stadium. And I sang the national anthem for the NFL, and Mike was there again. But he was like, wait, that's the same girl. I was with someone different. And it still wasn't till Renaissance that we finally connected, which is so wild. And then Cowboy Carter came around, and Mike was still working there. And Billy and I were asked to come as Beyonce's friends and family. And so I watched Cowboy Carter with Tina Knowles.
What? That's
That's
crazy.
babe.
Surreal.
When we came out onto the, so it was that platform that was in the middle of the thing. When we came out onto the platform, it was like, like when the kings and queens would go into court and they'd be like, from Zamunda, these is like, what I mean? So when we came out, me and Billy, the whole stadium was like, Billy, Marisha. I was like, what's happening? And then the Queen Mother, Tina Knowles, comes up, and we're like, oh my God, Tina. And she was so nice. And I was just standing there in between Billy and Tina Knowles, and Beyonce's looking at us because, she's looking at her mom. And I was just like, how did I get here? Like, that's why the story of my album is so crazy. I didn't want to tell this story because I was like, I would grow up on a hog farm in North Carolina, and now I'm like standing between Tina Knowles and Billy Porter watching Beyonce. Like, what's happening? But she played a big part in my life. Yeah, for sure.
Oh my God, that is
Oh my,
surreal.
so
And you
surreal.
deserve to be standing up there right there with them. I mean, the way that you are embraced by not only the Broadway community, but the UK, you're like, they tend to take on Americans every now and then. Nicole Scherzinger, Michelle Visage, and now Marisha Wallace here. You've crossed over and are just beloved by the public over there. It is so cool.
It is really cool because like you don't know where you're supposed to be. You don't really know. You have these ideas of what you think your life is supposed to be like, what you think your career is supposed to be like. Like, I thought I got to get to Broadway, and then when I get to Broadway, okay, that's, I've done it. I bet. Then I got to Broadway, and I was like, oh, this is it? This is like, there's got to be something more, because I wanted something more. But at that time, 2016, there was not a lot of options for Black women to be the leading lady. Because I wanted to be, if I wanted to just be in the ensemble, which is fine, I could have done that for the rest of my life and I would have been fine. But I just felt like there was something more for me. There was something more that I wanted. And then when I went to London, it was just like a whole, like my mind shifted because I could count on one hand how many roles were available to me at that time. It was like Motormouth, Maitre Mama Morton, Effie, Begging Waitress. Like it was the same sassy Black girl roles, which are fine, and they paid me a lot of money, and I was good at them. But I just felt like there was something else because I knew I had something else in me. And then I went to London, and it was like, wait. Oh, there's no restraints. There's no resistance to my art. There's no box. Oh, I'm not in a box. Oh, it doesn't matter that I'm Black, that I can play Adelaide, that I can play Ado Annie. That's not even the thought. Like, they're just like, oh, no, you're just the right person for this part. And that mind shift changed everything for me as an artist, as a person, because we also put the shackles on ourselves when we are boxed in. We put that on ourselves because we don't know any other way. We don't know because we, at the end of the day, we just trying to survive out here. We're just trying to make money so we can pay our bills and eat and take care of our families. So whatever they say will get us paid, we're gonna do. But when we find that there's another way, that's what London did for me. And they embraced me just the way I was. I didn't have to change who I was. I didn't have to try to be like somebody else. It was like, no, they just wanted me. And that change really was incredible. And then when they latch on in the UK, they're yours forever. That's why, like, people from like
Yes.
pop bands in the 90s can come sell out an arena in the UK because they when they get
Yes.
somebody that they like, they just stick with it. And it's really beautiful to see. It's nice.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah.
I'm so happy for you. Do you feel like there was a specific moment where you realized that that shift happened for you when you were performing in the UK?
Yeah, when I, so Effie, like I knew that, that role and those things, that made sense, like for what I was doing. Of course, that's a natural role to do. But when I did 80 Annie, I was like, oh wait, I can take these roles that have not been cast this way before and put my own spin on it, and it enriches the work. It doesn't take away, it doesn't become, if anything, it made it better. Like it was like, oh, this is another way to see these roles. And then when I did that, and then Adelaide was the real game changer because I worked with Sir Nicholas Heitner. He actually made Audra. So
Right.
he was the first person to cast Audra, a black, Carrie Partridge, is that her name?
Pepperidge, Pepperidge,
Pepperidge
yeah.
in Carousel. He cast her in that. And that was in the 90s when people were not doing that. That was not a thing. He tells me this amazing story
Right.
about her audition because he always says, did I ever tell you a story about Audra's audition? So she goes into the audition for the Hammerstein like estate. These are like the daughters of the estate. And she goes to sing the song. And he's like, if we do this, then this is very like you'll get it. This is be the one. And she was like, okay, I got it. So she goes in, she starts to sing, and she's like, oh, and then she faints. Boom. On the ground, and Nick is like, oh no, what are we gonna do now? So then he's like, oh no, we've ruined it, it's over. So she gets up, she says, can I have a glass of water? Goes outside, comes back, and smashes it and books the audition. And then he says to me, now, if you ever think you had a bad audition, you never had a worse audition than what Audra had for Carousel. And then she wins a Tony.
Yeah. If I fainted in any situation, it's curtains. I'm leaving. I'm going
It's
home.
curtains. I'm not getting up.
Oh, I'm playing dad, and they're going to have to cart me out of there.
Isn't that crazy? They're gonna have to take me out. Like, the fact that you're gonna get back up, drink some water, and be like, okay, let me hit it, and then book it, and then get a Tony. Like, what a moment. Anyway, so that was like, I knew I was in good hands with Nick on this part because he scouted me. So when he came to saw Oklahoma and was like, that's my Adelaide. And it was no question, it was no like, you're black. He didn't even care about that. Like, that was like not even in his mind about the part. He was like, no, you're the one. So then when we started excavating that role, they approach musicals so differently than the Americans do. Because I know when I've done a Casey show, we go straight into choreography. We go straight into, okay, stand on three. This is what I prepped, blah, blah, blah. The Brits, you'll do a week of table reads. Like when we started Guys and Dolls, he gave us the Runyon Land books and assigned each one of us a story to read based on our character. And then we all had to come in the next day and speak as our characters based on the book we read to be like, hi, my name is Janice. I'm from Brooklyn and I did this and blah, blah, blah. Like, so all of everybody in the cast, not just the leads, had to have a backstory.
It's like you're back in acting school.
Yes. And the dramaturgy that was all over the walls of like the looks, the clothes, the time period, because we were going for like the Goodfellas mob movie kind of look and feel to it. It was just so deep. And then when I added my own creative, where I was like, well, my Adelaide's black, what is her references? And her references were like Dorothy Dandridge and Eartha Kitt and like, those burlesque stars of the day, Billie Holiday, like even my sound was so infused. So I brought all that with me to Cabaret because we went so deep into how we can reimagine these roles without changing a word, without changing a song or anything. We just changed intentions, and you can use your dramaturgy and backstory to reimagine these roles and let people see them in a different way. And that's what I got to do with Sally. And I'm so grateful to Nick that I got to work with him before I did this, because I don't think my Sally would be what it is without Adelaide.
Wow. Well, speaking of Adelaide, I did get to see you in Guys and Dolls at the Bridge Theater. It was actually
Oh,
just about 2 years ago now. I was there for a
wow.
weekend, and That was one of the coolest theatrical experiences I've ever had. I was standing,
Oh, the
you know.
standing is so great.
And
Yeah.
can you explain to listeners what the immersive aspect of that production of Guys and Dolls was? Because we're still waiting for it to come to Broadway and or New York in some way.
Well, this is my pitch. I'm like, please, we have to get it to Broadway. It's so tricky though because of how it's staged. Well, it's like, if you don't know, it starts out completely flat. So when you come in, it looks like there's nothing there. It's just the signs of New York, people with hot dog carts and pretzels, and everyone's just standing in the street like you're in the street in New York. And people are like, well, is the play gonna happen here? Like, well, how's play? What is this the play? And then you hear the sights and the sounds and the smells. So you get fully immersive when you walk in. And then once the music starts, these lifts start coming out of the floor. Then they move interdependently. It's like 12 different lifts. They can go to like 6 feet in height. They can go to really low. So you look like you're walking up the steps. And then sometimes you're like you're standing at the bottom of a big platform. But when you look up, everything looks 12 feet tall. It's crazy. Cause I actually did get to go back and see it. And I was like, is this what people were seeing? I was so gagged. I was like, what? So imagine going to a Beyoncé concert, but a musical, because the people were literally at my feet. I was like, this is what Beyoncé feels like when she's performing. Like, the people are at your feet. It's a whole different experience. And so they have the New York City cops that are pushing the people around the action. So as the thing
Yes.
changes, as the set changes, you're in different spots. You can walk around it. You can go to different areas. So no one has a bad seat in that house. And if you're sitting, when we come up to 6 feet, you're eye level with the performers on stage. But it was just the most incredible. I have never been a part of a more inventive. Cabaret is very inventive as well, but Guys and Dolls was just like no one's ever done that. No one had ever done that at that
Yeah.
time. I don't think anyone has still not done it yet like that.
Totally agree.
No.
It was so good. Oh my God. I remember it was okay. So it was summer 2023. And I saw in the crowd Joe Alwyn was there, who
He was
Taylor
there.
Swift's ex-boyfriend, but they were split at the time.
I'm telling you, so many celebrities came. Like, I would literally look in that pit and be like, who, what? No, literally, I would be gagged. When Walter Wright was sitting there, standing in the like, Ian McKellen
Oh my God.
and missing King Charles's wife,
Camilla. That's crazy.
Camilla brought her whole family. And then when I met the king and queen, so they invited me to Buckingham Palace because of Guys and Dolls.
Oh my gosh.
So, yeah. So I go to Buckingham Palace for a tea in the backyard of the Buckingham Palace. This is what my life is like over there, y'all. It's crazy.
Well, I see why you never want to come back. I mean, my God.
It's crazy. So I go to Buckingham Palace. I'm like, what the heck is going on? I'm in my like fears thing. We're having tea. And then the king and queen come out, Camilla and Charles come out. They do, you know, the pomp and circumstance. Nobody does pomp and circumstance like the Brits. And then we're going down the line and they're meeting everybody. And then Camilla comes over. And she was like, and I was with Arlene Phillips, who's like a dame and my really good friend as well. So she was like, Richard, come over here. We got to meet the king. And I was like, okay. So I run over. And then she's with me and she goes to Camilla. She's like, hi, Camilla, this is Marisha. She was Miss Adelaide. And Camilla says, oh my God, you're Miss Adelaide. Charles, come. I need you to meet Miss Adelaide. And I was like, am I getting fangirl by like the king? And Camilla, they love this. He was like, she has not stopped talking about the show. It's incredible. Oh my God. It was nuts. I was just like, what's happening? How has musical theater got me here? Musical theater can take you to so many places. That's when people like try to be like, oh, it's just musical theater. I was like, you have no idea. Musical theater really touches so many people, and there's so many secret fans of musical theater,
Oh, yeah.
which I didn't know till I was on Celebrity Big Brother. And like the burly cameraman who you think doesn't know anything about musical was like, I love doing Guys and Dolls. You're amazing.
Wait, that is crazy.
Oh my God, that's so
cool. Well, you were on an iconic season of Celebrity Big Brother. You had
Yes.
Louis Walsh, who we loved from, we would be like bootleg streaming X Factor UK when we
Oh,
were,
did you?
oh my God.
Oh
So we
my God.
loved Louis. And then Ekin Su.
Yes.
Famously, you know, we here in the States love her from Love Island, but from Traitors, of course.
Yep.
And then
And Sharon
Sharon.
Osbourne.
Oh my God,
So when
crazy.
Ozzy just passed, I texted Louie and Sharon and was like, I'm so sorry. It's just so weird because she would talk to me about Ozzy in the house all the time because I would ask her, like, you know, what is it like? Because I like to get to know people, like, for real. Like, I think it's just so, because, you know, people try to get to know you because they're
Right.
trying to clout chase or whatever, Like, I was like, this woman, I mean,
Yeah.
I just want to know her. Like, I just want to know her story. Like, her information about her career is more vital to me than her even helping me. You know what I mean? Like, so, like, I liked to really get to know her as a person. So she told me a lot about Ozzy and about how she felt about him and how she's been riding and dying with this man for so long. And she had her own record label and stuff. And like, that was what was so nice about that season. A lot of people in that house were either in the music industry or theater or some part of like music. So there was a lot of singing in the house. Sharon told me a lot about the record industry and about how that works and being a part of like a musical family in the record industry side. So I learned some. And Louis Walsh made some of the biggest bands in the world. He made One Direction,
Right.
Westlife.
Westlife,
So he would just tell me about what that was like creating a band and like in those times, like in the early 2000s, it was wild out here. They were putting headlines in the tabloids. And he was like, that's what we had to do to make these bands popular. And sometimes it would tear those people down. And he was like, but that was just how it was back in the day. We would plant stories that people were killed in plane crashes. I was like, what's happening? But I got to learn all this stuff in the Big Brother house and even how Louis struggled. He's gay and he couldn't be out for so long because of the music industry and how the world works. And still to this day, he's still scared about like people finding out about his partner, but people knowing, you know, because he keeps that part of his life so private. So it was just a really special thing to do that to, as an
Yeah.
artist, to be with other artists who've been in the trenches. And it was so interesting too, because at the time, me and Nicole Scherzinger were up for all the same awards,
Right. It was that
but
season.
Louis didn't know me. So like he would be like, oh, this is Nicole's time, Marisha. She like this is she's not really he didn't know like that I was up for the same awards as Nicole.
Crazy.
So when it was all take going down, people on Twitter were like, wait, Marisha is in the same world. Like, what are you talking about? But he didn't know me.
Right.
It was wild.
Speaking of awards, you found out that you had received an Olivier nomination while you were in the Big Brother house.
That's why it was a gag because the whole time Louis had been saying, oh, this is Nicole's time. This is Nicole. And then I got nominated in the house and he was like, what?
That clip was so great. I only saw two clips from that season, and I wish I could go back and watch it all now, but
Happy for
it was
me.
like a phone booth challenge or something.
It was a fortune teller ball. So at this time in the competition as well, things are heating up and like people are thinking you're going to get evicted or you're going to have to say the evictions. Like, so when they were like, Marisha, go to the fortune teller thing. And I was like, oh no, they're going to tell me to evict somebody. That's what this ball is going to say. So when I took the ball out, it said, in the future, you will be at the Royal Albert Hall because you have been nominated for Best Actress in a Musical. And when I tell y'all, because, but before this, I had went to Big Brother because I knew this was around the time that it would happen. And I asked Big Brother and I said, did I get nominated for an Olivier? And Big Brother said, don't worry about the outside world. Just know you were a star in the Big Brother house.
Okay.
So I didn't know. I had like been like, oh, they're not gonna tell me. And then when they told me, I screamed. And the house kind of knew that it was possible, but let me tell you, the whole house was like, yeah,
Oh.
like screaming. That moment was the craziest moment of my entire career because I was like, I'm on a TV show talking about a musical that I'm in real life, but in a fake place, like. But I'm like, how I'm a Big Brother talking about a musical. Like, what is happening? It was crazy,
Oh.
but it was so beautiful because it shed a light on theater that I didn't know the UK, a lot of the UK didn't even know about the Olivier's.
Mm.
It's not as like world renowned as the Tony Awards. Like the Tony Awards is more in the zeitgeist of American culture. But the Olivier Awards, unless you're like really in the business, you don't know about it, which that blew my mind. Because then like the everyman, like people who aren't in the theater world were like, congratulations on the Olivia Award. They couldn't even say it. They were like, I didn't even know what it was. And then the Olivier Awards got so much press and people were like tuned in and people were like, oh, we want to really know about that now. And it got changed to a different time slot on television. Like it was amazing.
Wait,
It was great.
that's your impact, Marisha. That's so cool. That's why people
Yeah.
need to take theater stars seriously as part of pop culture. And
We are so connected. But before now, before, I don't know when it happened where musical theater people weren't cool anymore, but back in the day, Barbra Streisand was like an icon. Liza Minnelli, icon. Jennifer Holliday even was on the radio all the time, like for her R&B tracks, for disco tracks. And I'm telling you, was in the zeitgeist of pop culture for Black culture. Like that was not a musical theater song. Like many people in the Black culture did not even know that was from Dreamgirls. Like they just thought that was a song. Like that was just like a song people who could sang because it would be like on Showtime at the Apollo, things like that. But musical theater is in the zeitgeist. Whitney Houston sang Home for the Wiz from the Wiz for her first television performance.
I need to look that up.
This is what I'm saying. Like musicals are really and were a part of pop culture more back then than they are. It's slowly coming back thanks to Wicked, thanks to like even West Side Story started kind of starting the trend
I would say
of
Hamilton too, don't you think?
Hamilton. Yes, absolutely. Hamilton. It's like they made musical theater stars cool again. Like now you see them in more popular spaces. It's very interesting how music, I was like, musical theater songs slap. Like they're in the cult. People didn't even know where maybe this time came from. Like when it starts in the show, people are like, oh, that's how that fits in the show because it's become its own standard in its own world. Like not even disconnected from cabaret, it's its own like entity of a song. So I think that's what's really cool to like reintroduce this music. And that's why I made this album because I was like, what happened to like these big Barbra Streisand albums that got Grammys? She was more popular than the Beatles in her time, which is so wild to me.
Crazy.
But what happened to like the musical theater, the Beyoncés of musical theater? Like, do you know what I mean? Like, we were just as popular as the Beatles. Like, that's crazy to me. But I'm trying to shift this back with what I'm doing. And I think with what Cynthia's doing is shifting it back to popular culture. And it's really exciting to be a part of it.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you mentioned a little bit earlier about how you never believed that musical theater could take you to these crazy places like Buckingham Palace or even the Celebrity Big Brother house. We do on the show like to talk about the moment that got you into the arts at the first place. We call it the Ring of
Yeah.
Keys. I know you talk a little bit about it on your album, but and I'm hoping that this is what you're going to say, but do you feel like you had a Ring of Keys moment that made you realize you wanted to pursue the arts?
Oh, absolutely. And it's on my album. I had this teacher, Miss Grantham. She actually was really big into pageants and she got me into show choir. You know, show choir is like Glee. So like that's where I started really like singing musical theater songs. And I remember we would do like Destiny's Child, Survivor. Like all kinds of crazy
Back
stuff.
to
But she
Beyonce.
aced that back to Beyonce and she took me to my first Broadway show. And she told me before this show, she was like, you know, you're not like the other kids. Like, you could actually do this professionally. And I was like, well, what is that even? What are you talking about? Like, I didn't even know that you could make money or have a career doing this if you're not Britney Spears or if you're not, I didn't know about the musical theater pipeline that you could actually have a career because I didn't grow up on Broadway. Like I didn't grow up going to go see Broadway shows. I grew up in the country. So she took me with her own money to go see Aida. And I remember we were watching God's Love Nubia and she pointed at Heather Edley and she was like, that's you. That can be you. That's you. That's what you're supposed to be doing. Can you imagine like being 16, 17 years old and somebody seeing that? I'm gonna cry. Somebody seeing that in you before you even see it in yourself. If she hadn't lit that fire in me to go chase that, I don't think I would be here where I am today because I didn't even know that was an option. Like, we didn't have the internet like we do now. We didn't have all this connectivity and all this representation, you know what I mean? That's why it's so important to be the first Black Sally Bowles, because there's somebody who having their Ring of Keys moment with me every night. There's somebody who's saying, what? There was a girl at the stage door 2 days ago, and it really made me cry. And she was like, you're the first Black person I've seen in a musical. That was mind-boggling to me. That was
Wow.
like, I was like, what? She was like, you're the first Black person I've seen on stage in a musical. And I was like, it's 2025 and we're still having firsts like that. It's so important. It's so important. And I know people talk about DEI and all that crap. It's bigger than that. Because when you can see somebody that looks like you, it could change your life. Like I don't think I would have had the career that I had if I didn't have Heather Headley being the first. Or I didn't have these people or Audra being the first to look at to be like, oh, there's a blueprint, there's a map. Even if I don't follow that, you know, to the T, there's a destination. You know, I don't know how I'm gonna get there, but I'm gonna get there. And that was my Ring of Keys moment, that Miss Grantham saying, that's you, that can be you. And having people who believe in you is the most powerful tool you'll ever have. Just one person saying, you got this, you can do it. And then I've just collected those people all my life. So it's like my team, I know they would like go off the edge of the earth with me. Like they're like ride or die. When I said I wanted to be Sally, there was no question. There was no hesitation. There was no, I don't know, are you sure? No. It was like, let's get it. Let's go get it. And I got that in London. And I really do feel like if I hadn't gone there, none of this would have happened. Like this, that being there and being able to do my art with no resistance and no box and no person saying no. It was just all Miss Grantham's being like, that's you, do it. That's you, get it. That's you. And those angels have been coming in and out of my life for years. Casey Nicholaw was saw it in me. He was like, you, I want you in every show that I do. You come to London. You like, it's just, I think people need to really value, because we're so online.
Yeah.
We're so worried about what the comments are saying, what the people are saying about me online, which is valid, but it's the people in your real life that are going to make you. It's the people who are validating you in real life that are the ones that truly matter, because those are the ones who are going to get you where you need to go. And then the other people will join. The other people will come along. But those ones in real life, the people, because we'll get 100 comments of greatness and one comment of bad, and we listen to that one bad comment. Instead of focusing on those 100 people and harnessing those 100 people power to fuel you to your next goal. I think that's what we have to focus on as artists. Like, really just believe the believers, go with the believers. And the people who don't like you, they were never going to support you anyway. They were never going to be your fans. They were never going to buy your album. They were never going to buy that ticket to see your show. That's okay.
Yeah.
You don't want them. You don't want them. They were never going to listen to your podcast. They were never going to do it anyway. Do you know what I
Yes,
mean?
absolutely. No, as you were saying that, I was thinking that it's like relationships too, anything. Like
Yes.
it's such true life advice. Gosh, I'm thinking about Mrs. Grantham, and I'm wondering, did she get a chance to follow you through your career and see you in any roles as you went
Yes.
on?
She was actually going to come to my concert when I did North Carolina, but she couldn't come. I'm trying to get her to come to Cabaret. I'm sending her the album because I got to send her interlude, Miss Grantham interlude. She's such an amazing woman. Like, to use your own money, like, I didn't even process the fact she had to pay for gas. She had to pay for the ticket. She had her own children. And she literally treated me like I was one of her kids. When I did pageants and stuff, like, she would help me get the costume. Like, she helped me apply for college. She made sure that my mom filled out the right financial aid paperwork. She took me to my audition for school, which was an hour away from where we lived. I had to go through a vocal surgery. She took me to the ear, nose, and throat doctor. She took me, like, this was not, she didn't have to do any of that. She didn't have to do any of that.
She's incredible.
She's incredible. And people forget, I have relied on the kindness of strangers my whole life. Like, we look at the world and we're like, oh, people are cynical, people are like that. But there's a lot of good people out there. There's a lot of people who want to help you, and you haven't even met them yet.
Absolutely.
And
Yeah.
sometimes you're so focused on those negative ones, the people who want to help you are right there. They're right there waiting to change your life. And you so got your head looking some other way because you're trying to impress the people who weren't ever going to be there for you anyway, instead of focusing on the people who
Yeah.
love you. And that's what I learned through this whole journey, is to just focus on the people who love you. It's okay. Go where you're loved, not just where you're needed. Go where you're loved. When I went to London, they needed me on Broadway. I could have been great, but they loved me in London. They loved me in a way that I hadn't been loved. And now coming back, I feel that love here now. But then also because I learned to love myself in a way that I didn't when I first arrived, because I was trying to get validation from an industry that was never really set up with me in mind anyway. Theater was never set up for Black people to be the stars of it. Like, what? It just wasn't. And that's okay. And it's not even a slight on the theater. That's just how it was built.
Right.
And then when they figured out we have really great talent, let's put them in the side roles. Let's spice it up. Like, let's put them in there. And then we started getting lead roles. Now, okay, wait, what's happening now? The landscape is changing. Some people don't like that. Some people do like that. Some people are welcoming, but there's always going to be resistance when you're changing something that was not made for you. And that's why I'm okay with it. I'm okay with the resistance. I'm okay with the backlash. I'm okay with the acceptance as well. Like, I'm okay with when you're blazing a trail, there's going to be debris, there's going to be fallout, there's going to be resistance to what you're doing, but you could just have to keep paving the road, because then it's going to be smooth. And when we're able to just, then the people like Jasmine Rogers gets to, go down that road. And the people like me, because of what Audra did, can go down that road. It's nice to see. And people like Aisha, like, to see all those girls doing those roles really makes me feel like what I'm doing is working. Like, it's like, okay, we're making progress. And I know we have a long way to go, but like Billy said, this wouldn't have happened 30 years ago. This would not have even been a thought 30 years ago, but we're making progress. We are.
Absolutely.
Yes.
To have two Black performers leading this Broadway musical, it hasn't happened. It hasn't happened.
In the 60-year history of the show, there's not been a Black Cliff, Black Sally, Black MC. And I don't think people really know how historic that is, only because when a big show, like a property like this, gives you a green light, it sends a message to all the other ones as
Yes.
well. Because they're all watching each other. Guys and Dolls was watching Cabaret. Cabaret's watching, Oklahoma, like all these big properties, because this is their namesake. This is their, this is special for them to say, yes, I am going to allow you to use your artistry to tell this story. We had to get signed off.
Right.
Like, I met the heads of the estate for Joe Mastroff and Candor and Ebb, and they asked us permission. That's what really blew my mind, because I was like, I forgot. They have to say yes. And them saying yes sends a message to all the other estates. This is acceptable. This can work. this can make us money, but this can also help further the legacy of our show. And so that's what's been really powerful to see, because now there will be more Black Sally Bowles. There will be more Asian Sally Bowles. There will be more, you know what I mean? This is, it's not just about excluding people from the conversation, it's including more people. There will still be white Sally Bowles. That's okay. But now they're going to be more diverse Sally Bowles. More people can play it. More people. It's going to add. It's not subtracting anything, it's adding.
Very well said.
Marisha, I feel like we could talk to you forever and ever. I'm
I
so curious
know.
about your life, career, all these different tidbits, but we're sadly wrapping up here. Really quick about Cabaret, just before we go to our final segment, I'm wondering if there is a moment in the show that you look forward to doing every single night as Sally Bowles.
Oh, as two. Well, first off, is maybe this time, because the lore of it now, because I've done it so many different places and people are so excited about it when it's about to happen. But in that moment in the room, it's like everyone takes an inhale and then no one breathes for 3 minutes. And we all, and then not till I release them, I'll win, when I say the last note. And then we all just sigh, breathe together. But it's just such a beautiful moment, and how it's staged and the lighting. And it's the first time you see the underbelly of my Sally, because in the first, hour of the show, she's like a showgirl and blah, blah, blah. She's running around. And then you get to see, oh, this is the underbelly of a strong Black woman. This is the underbelly of a character that you think you know. The audience gets to feel that for the first time, and you can feel the shift in that moment. That's beautiful. But then Cabaret, I think for me, Cabaret is an amalgamation of every 11 o'clock number I've ever gotten to perform. And I'm telling you, I know where I've been. Like, even I Can't Say No, and like to take it, like Adelaide's Lament, like those numbers all into one thing. But then also, it's his own thing, because in that moment, because my Sally can sing really well, and I play on the fact that, Black performers had to be 10 times as good to get into these rooms. But then also, they had to have the heartbreak and tragedy of never being able to make it, because they won't, because of racism, because of systematic race, because of where they are in the world. Like, the Billie Holidays never got to see herself become Billie Holiday. Do you know what I mean? But I feel all of the ancestors with me in that song. And everyone is on a knife's edge. And by the time we get, like you said, when you listen to it, we're all like, yeah, people were stamping on the floor. When I go through the floor, people are like, come back. Because they want to stand, and they're standing and giving me a standing ovation. I got a standing ovation after maybe this time, and Cabaret many times in the show. But to get an elicit a response like that, it's just so beautiful, because I just want people to feel something, Like, I want people to feel. That's what theater is supposed to do. Because I know what it was like when I went and saw a show and I was like, now that's Broadway. Now that's how I want to feel. Like, that's what keeps bringing me back to wanting to see more things, because I'm chasing that feeling. So we're making that feeling every night. It's really cool.
Oh my
I
goodness.
love it. I love
Congratulations.
it.
I hope I'll get the chance to see you as Sally
Please
Bowles. Amazing.
come. Oh, you have
I
to.
know. Well, as our final segment before we say goodbye, we like to
Yeah.
leave the listeners with what we call a dose of drama. It could be a suggestion, what's going on in your mind, hearts. I want to say I'm thinking about this musical that I saw earlier this summer, Two Strangers Carry a Creek Across New York.
Oh,
I
I
saw it
love
in
that.
Boston. It was in the UK. I don't know if you got the chance to see it on the West End. Yeah, and now it's
Yes.
coming to Broadway.
I know Tim Jackson, who's the director of it. And
Oh.
he also has done Dylan Mulvaney's show,
Ooh,
which is
yes.
also incredible. Like, that show is insane. Yeah, no, that show is amazing. So I'm
So
really excited
good.
they're
So
coming.
good.
Yeah.
So happy. Yes, that's my dose of drama. I need to be there to see it again and again. It's so
Yeah.
special. Connor, do you have a dose of drama?
I do. Oh my God. Well, I'm obsessed with Mersha's album, of course. And my drama about it is The Gods Love Nubia isn't long enough. We need the full song on here, and I'm
Yeah.
feeling like, can we get a bonus track, something? Because the vocals are just pristine, Marisha. Oh
I
my
love
God.
God's Loves Me. And you know what? I did feel like people were gonna be mad.
You leave them wanting
I
more.
know that you're right. I'm gonna have to do the deluxe.
Yes.
Taylor's all her
There we
versions.
go. Marisha's
I
version.
love it.
Life of a showgirl in the gods of Nubia.
Oh, so good.
Oh my
Marisha, do
God.
you have a dose of drama?
What's my dose of drama? Ooh. Oh, Building the Band. Have you watched that on
I
Netflix?
heard it's great. No, but I need to watch it. I need to.
First off, Nicole Scherzinger's in her bag. This girl is always on the finger of the pulse. That's the girl. She's always in the center of pop culture. I don't know how she does it. She's always and consistently. So I watched Building the Band. It's so good. I was addicted. And I've always loved these Building the Band shows anyway, but they do it so beautifully and it's so like nice to see them being encouraging and kind to the contestants. Like, and the singing on there is crazy. I had chills the whole time.
I have to watch.
And then Liam Payne's on there, which
Oh,
is so
I know.
sweet and sad. And it made me see him in a whole different light because you kind of like when, you know, when people pass from these types of things, people think certain things. It's just so beautiful for us to see him. Oh, this is just, he is, you know, he's living in his life and living his life is so beautiful and he's smiling and he's enjoying himself because people just focus on the darkness sometimes. I was like, but people have lights and
Right.
shades. Like, you know what I mean? It, but the bands, season four and frequency, like I want to follow them. Like I want to go.
Oh my God. Okay. Oh my God. I need to watch it. I've been meaning to, but you've convinced me.
Please,
You fully convinced me.
please watch Building the Band. Like I was like I was so excited every night to come home after cabaret to watch Building the Band.
That's so
I
cute.
was watching in between shows as well. But Nicole, you're in your bag. I'm just letting you know, she's in her bag.
Yes, always. And so are you, Marisha. Everyone needs to stream, buy everything. Your Live in London album. It is such a true, I mean, I think it's a masterpiece. And the fact that it was one night only, congratulations. And you're just at Marisha Wallace on all your social media,
Yeah,
right?
Marisha Wallace, follow me.
And go see the cabaret at the Kit Kat Club, y'all, until
Yes,
October.
19th.
Oh my God, you got 2 months.
You got 2 months. Come on now.
Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you so much, Marisha. We appreciate it. Well, everyone's following you. They got to follow us. We're at the Drama Podcast. Connor's at Connor McDowell. I am at Dylan McDowell. This has been so much fun.
Incredible. Thank you.
And Connor, I will see you next time. Drama!
Drama. Drama.